Hi, I'm Dan, and I'm working from home in the South Loop, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much, Dan. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven, and this is show number 1027. What we do here on the program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. So hello to Bob, and happy Father's Day to all of the dads out there. I hope it's a great weekend for you. And because it is Father's Day weekend, I thought, well, hey, I've got a couple of kids. My boys, Mikey and Joey, are here at the beginning of the show. Thanks for being here so early, guys. Mikey, tell everyone how old you are. What grade are you going into?
I'm 11 and I'm going into sixth grade.
Sixth grade. How about that? Now, you are quite the musician, right? Tell us what you're playing here.
Guitar.
And what else? You're playing another one too.
Viola.
Viola. All right. Guitar and viola. Do you have a favorite song to play on either of those instruments?
Not really.
What about anything from Green Day? I thought you were really into Green Day.
I am.
Would that be your favorite then?
Yeah, but I wouldn't know what song.
Well, you like When I Come Around.
Yeah.
That's a good song.
Play it.
Okay, well, there it is. All right. Anything else we should know about you, 11-year-old Mikey Steven?
I like to sleep.
Yeah. Spoken like a true middle schooler, I like to sleep. All right, over here, Joey Steven. Joey, how old are you?
8.
Now, what are you really into these days?
Sports.
Specifically, what sport?
Baseball.
And you just won a championship, right?
Yeah.
The 8-year-old Little League championship. And Mikey, you're over there saying I'm into sports too. You are. You like baseball too, right? We watch Cubs games, and we also watch, what, Bears games together. Anything else we need to know about you, Joey?
I made the Eagles team.
The local traveling team?
Yeah, I got my baseball bag and jerseys. Yeah.
Right. So we're going to be doing a little travel for your baseball league. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to bring you guys here because it's Father's Day. And because of you, I have like a whole like day, weekend, holiday thing because of you guys. I'm part of that club now. So thanks for that. You guys are the best, and I love being your dad, and I'm excited to see how you guys are growing up here. Just don't grow up too quickly, okay? Could you just slow it down a little bit?
Sure. I feel like you say that too much.
You feel like I say that too much? One day when you have kids, you will say that to them because you guys grow up so fast.
I'm not so sure.
You're not so sure? Trust me on that one. All right, guys. Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to celebrate Father's Day with you guys this weekend. And Mom, of course.
Yeah.
Love Mom.
Yeah.
And we have a great show for you today. We will get an update on certificates of innocence in the state of Illinois. Also, some new local music and a new film from a Chicago filmmaker all about identity. Excited that you are here listening to the show today. Mikey and Joey, strap in. It's going to be a good one, all right?
Okay.
You are listening to Outside the Loop. I am Mike Steven. What's the station?
720 WGN Radio.
It is radio. Nice job. Back in May on this show, we learned how state's attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke has been blocking many certificates of innocence for people who were wrongfully convicted of crimes. These certificates officially clear a person's record and can play an important role in helping them rebuild their lives. Dan Hinkle, a senior reporter at Injustice Watch, which is an independent local newsroom focused on the court system, joins us once again with an update. We could check out what he's writing at injusticewatch.org. Dan, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. I appreciate you having me on.
You got it. So a quick reminder of how this works, because, you know, the legal system isn't always as, say, straightforward as it maybe could be, but it's complicated. But basically, when someone is exonerated, they're really not free from the baggage of the conviction. Can you just explain how that works?
Right. Well, a certificate of innocence is it's a court order that you get from a judge, typically in the same criminal case that, you know, from which you're, you know, the original criminal case that you had. And, you know, the certificate exists. The reason that exonerated people want them is because it comes with a certain amount of state compensation, and it comes with the right to expunge your case from court records, right? So which might help you get jobs or housing or things like that. And the essential reason that these are very popular, you know, according to the people who seek them, who I talk to, is that basically, you know, you get out of prison and typically you have nothing, right? Like you don't have an employment history, don't have any money, sometimes you don't have any family support. Mm-hmm. So the idea of a certificate of innocence is to, you know, sort of unlock these things that can help you get started with your life, you know, usually for these guys a few decades late.
Right. And as you're talking about here, like if you do a background check, if you're trying to get a job and someone does a background check on you, if you don't have that certificate, the first thing that comes up is, well, you've been convicted of whatever crime, and that's still on your record. So these certificates of innocence are really important.
They play sort of a dual role in that, you know, you can use it to get your conviction out of the system. For a lot of these guys, there's still going to be all kinds of paper trail online, right? That's going to point out to people that you have, you know, typically a murder conviction. And so if you talk to the people who seek these, a lot of times they say, well, yeah, there's the formal expungement. And then there's sort of the version of clearing my name that comes with having a certificate that I can produce on demand to anybody who seeks it, right? Like if a hiring manager at Home Depot runs up against your criminal conviction in a background check, you can say, yeah, well, you know, take a look at this.
Right. So you and I have talked about how State's Attorney Burke has been blocking a lot of these certificates of innocence, which was really it's a different approach from her predecessor. So an update here: last month, the First District Illinois Appellate Court ruled in a Cook County case that some wrongfully convicted people should automatically get these certificates. Can you tell us about this update?
Yeah, attorneys in this space generally refer to it as the, sort of the automatic provision. And the idea is legislators pass this, and it what it does is that if you meet a certain set of criteria, you had an evidentiary hearing under the Post-Conviction Hearing Act on a claim of actual innocence based on newly discovered evidence, you won a new trial, you weren't retried, and the state dismissed the charges, then basically you are automatically entitled to a certificate of innocence without the discretion of the judge coming into play. It's one of the two ways that people will get these. And in the Frank Drew case, his lawyers had argued, and this was a murder in Evanston in 1998. Frank did 24 years before he got out. There had been some witness recantations, and he had long said that he was abused into providing the confession. In this case, his attorneys had argued, hey, he meets every one of these bars, and so he should automatically have this. The judge doesn't even have a right to say no. The appeals court agreed over the objections of prosecutors, who said in his criminal case, the judge, you know, in a criminal case, the judge should have to issue sort of an affirmative finding of this person's innocence. And it's not enough just to meet these sort of bars that are in the statute. The court said that's not the case. And his lawyers said, you know, that's not really a thing courts do anyway. So I'm not sure how you could hold them to that. So,
and there is another update with regard to Springfield, and the Illinois General Assembly in Springfield voted to increase the state compensation for people who receive certificates of innocence. Now, the governor hasn't signed that yet, but this is significant, too.
Yep, that's correct. For a long time, exonerated people and the organizations that represent them had lobbied for an increase in the compensation that comes with a certificate of innocence. For some time, it had been, you know, people were getting an average of about $15,000 per year of incarceration. It was capped at most recently at around $300,000 total, which means that if you did, and it was capped at sort of compensating you for up to 14 years of incarceration. Well, there are guys who've done 30 or 40 years before being exonerated, right? And so recently the legislature voted to increase the compensation to up to $50,000 per year of incarceration. And I think it's $25,000 per year under other circumstances of probation or parole. And so, yeah, and it eliminates the caps. So if you, you know, do the math, it could turn out to be significantly more for people, particularly those who did significant amounts of time.
So these updates here, I mean, this is a direct clash, really, with Eileen O'Neill Burke's office. I mean, how she's been looking at and approaching certificates of innocence. Here we have a couple updates that kind of run counter to her approach. I know you're trying to get her to go on the record and you haven't been able to do so yet. But I don't know. It seems like there's a little bit of a conflict that's set up here.
Yeah, I mean, they're absolutely these two, you know, actions definitely represent the state going in a pretty different direction from her. I would love to speak with her about it, love to get a little more of a rationale. What she has said publicly is essentially that she views certificates of innocence as being for people who have concrete and irrefutable evidence of their innocence, you know, DNA, something like that. People who work in the criminal justice system will point out that it is just not very common for that sort of thing to exist. And so having that as the standard is going to lead to you not, you know, assenting to very many of these petitions. But yeah, that's been her general viewpoint in public. She hasn't made a, she hasn't, we don't know whether she's going to continue to challenge the appellate ruling. And yeah, so we'll see about that.
Well, one thing I really just, you know, think about when I read what you're reporting here is the humanity of it. And, you know, people's lives are just totally upended and chunks of their lives are taken from them. One person you talk about in your reporting, Johnny Savory, he was 14 years old when he was arrested for murder in Peoria, and he spent 30 years locked up before he was released in 2006. He is working on getting his certificate of innocence. He was pardoned in 2015. I actually interviewed him back in 2009, and I'm just going to play this because I want us to get a sense of the humanity of what we're talking about here. This is Johnny Savory. He's a 14-year-old boy talking about his experience getting locked up and accused of murder, which he did not do. Check this out.
They took me back to the polygraph examiner. It was about 7:30 p.m. that night. Polygraph examiner, different one this time. He just became just irate. He was calling me a murderer. He called me a liar. The tears began to flow from my eyes because nobody never done nothing like that to me before. You know, no adult, no, I never experienced what I was going through. And it just went downhill. The officer came in. I didn't want no longer to talk to the polygraph examiner, so we never finished that polygraph examination. Officer Martella Tiblis, which is Marcella Brown, that's two names she go by. She came in, and instead of dealing with the polygraph examiner for the abuse that he was inflicting, I didn't realize at the time that they were looking at it. You know, they were watching me through whatever, two-way glass or what have you. But they knew what he was doing and had done to me. And I said, okay, I did it. Just, can I go home? And they said, no. And then she began to word me along with, okay, well, this happened at the scene, this happened. And I disagreed.
They basically wore you down to the point where you would say anything.
Yeah, I couldn't know. I had lost my will. And then maybe about 60 seconds, the confession lasts about 60 seconds.
And they used that 60-second confession to convict him, and he is locked up for 30 years. But that's, again, that's the sense of what we're talking about here. And I think it's important to keep that human aspect sort of at the center. But you talk to Johnny, he is still, you know, all these years later, he's still working to get that certificate of innocence.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And he's in kind of a special position that involves a pardon. And I know his attorneys are working on it. He, you know, a thing that I picked up on from talking to a lot of these guys is that, sure, there's the practical stuff that comes along with a certificate of innocence, right? There's the compensation. There's the, you know, these can be filed with lawsuits, right, which can reap large amounts of money. You know, there's the expungement and all that stuff. That's all there. I have talked to so many of these guys now, and I think that a thing that I have really picked up on is the way that there's an emotional resonance here that just cannot really be described in the practicalities of the matter, right? Mm-hmm. That for a lot of these people, what really matters about this is being done with the system and having someone admit they made a mistake, right? It's a thing that over and over again, every one of these people emphasized to me is that in seeking a certificate of innocence, what so many of them are looking for is just some admission from the state that what happened to them, what happened to their families was wrong. Like in the Frank Drew case, I spoke with him the other day after the ruling, and Frank, you know, with considerable emotion was saying, I just want to be done with this. Like yeah. The prosecution keeps getting chances to step in and say that I did this crime and I didn't do this crime. Right. Like there's just a feeling of once you think you're out and they pull you back in. Right. There's just this sense that you never are done with being accused of this thing. And every time you think you're done, you're not.
It's an incredible thing. And the fight continues, and we'll see if the governor signs the bill about the compensation and, you know, looking for certificates of innocence. Many people are pursuing that right now. And I think that's really something we want to think about here in terms of the process. And I think why your reporting is so important, because a lot of people don't know that this is a thing. So we can all go to injusticewatch.org to see Dan Hinkle's reporting along with his colleagues about wrongful convictions and certificates of innocence. Dan Hinkle is a senior reporter at Injustice Watch. Again, that is a local independent newsroom focused on the court system. Dan, as always, thanks for your time and your reporting.
I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Let's talk about some local music coming from Cult Canyon and the guy behind Cult Canyon, the band leader, Josh Shequin, is here with us on the show today. Josh, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Thanks, Mike. It's nice to be here.
Well, it's nice to have you here. So I like your music. It sounds great. And let's talk about your music. So, you know, I'm thinking like it's kind of in that indie rock vein. How would you describe your tunes?
What did I say the other day? I was just like, you know, it's in this comfortable place. It's not experimental, I would say. It uses melodies and harmonies and song structures that are in the pop vein, verses and choruses and some solos. But beyond that, I try to push it a little bit. I use dissonance and I use some time signatures that are a little off, but in essence, it's got a lot of electricity and it's got a lot of really, really good harmonies and really good musicianship. I was really happy to partner with friends of mine from the best Fleetwood Mac tribute band in the world called Secondhand News. So we've been playing for 5 years and I brought those folks in to help me with my solo. Well, I guess it's more of a collaborative project than anything.
Yeah.
But they're just really great musicians. And so I was able to tap them for this record. And I think it ended up pretty great.
And the record is called Smoke Tricks. It's out right now. I know it came out now a few months ago, back in March. But Secondhand News, that's a great band. They're so good.
Thanks.
And they're part of this record, which I think is really neat. And would it be fair to say, I don't know, I'm feeling a little psychedelic rock in there at times?
At times, yeah. There's definitely a part of my sonic world that tries to push it into a place where, you know, you're making an audio world. And part of that is using, you know, some cool psychedelic effects and different ways of using, you know, reverbs and delays and stuff to expand the sound and make it what it is.
Well, it sounds great. Again, the album is called Smoke Tricks and we can check it out. Is the easiest way, the best way, just to go to your website, Josh?
That is an easy way. From there, you can launch into any kind of streaming service that you need. I do have a record there streaming on the site, and it's joshchic.com or cultcanyonmusic.com.
All right, so we will link up to those. And speaking of Cult Canyon, the band, one of the bands that you are involved with right now, you have a show coming up in just a couple of days on Monday, this Monday, June 22nd. This is happening at Cafe Mustache, which is on Milwaukee Avenue, 2313 North Milwaukee Avenue. Tell us about the show coming up on Monday.
Yeah, this show is something that I've been trying to put together for a few years. Back in 2019, I recorded with a string section, and strings and horns have been part of my palette for a long time. I was in a band called the M's in the early 2000s, and we brought in lots of strings and lots of horns and arrangements through my good friend Dave Max Crawford, who does my arranging. So in 2019, we recorded three songs, and then the pandemic hit, so everything kind of got put on hold. And, you know, leading up to about 2023 is when I was writing and putting together Smoke Tricks, and strings were always on my mind. So this show is very string centric. So it's not going to be necessarily a typical band setup. I'll have the string quartet there, a little bit more acoustic-y, I would say, but a real, I don't know, feather in my cap to be able to kind of bring that part of Cult Canyon to the front. And hopefully there'll be a lot more of that kind of stuff. But it's the first show where it'll be very much about the string section as the backing.
I love that. I love strings. I love horns. I mean, those two areas, those two facets of music, it's just it's so special. And
it really
is. We can get some strings going. This is Cafe Mustache Monday, the 22nd, just a couple of days, 2313 North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago. And I know that you're also involved with another band, like you needed something else to do. So here we go. This band is called Temp Wishes. You have a single out right now, right?
Yeah, that's right. So this is another kind of pandemic baby. But friends of mine from other bands that have seen some success, Edward Anderson from the 1900s, Colby Stark played with Bobby Kahn and Hedda Hemer. And they were in a band of mine called Sabres, which you can find on my website too, back in 2013-14. And we just kind of kept hanging around. We had a practice space and kept recording music. And finally, we just got kind of angry with ourselves that we hadn't finished this thing. So we finished it earlier this year, and now we're rolling it out. And the single Flash Fantasy is the first one. And you can find that on flashfantasy.com. It's kind of a hidden website on my website. But yeah, it's streaming everywhere now, and it's really getting some good looks. So pretty happy with that project as well. And that leans a little bit more into the psychedelic folk spectrum than the Cult Canyon stuff.
I think it all sounds great. And looking down the road here to July 14th, that's Tuesday, you'll be playing outside of a small venue called Wrigley Field.
Yeah. But we're playing in the Gallagher's Way, 2-hour set. So we're going to be playing a lot of, I don't have 2 hours of Cult Canyon music, so it's going to be a lot of other stuff as well. But yeah, 2 hours before the NoahCon, night one of two nights at Wrigley. So that's pretty exciting.
That is awesome. And I got to say, I remember I was doing college radio at WLUW at Loyola in the 2000s. I think I played some of the M's. I'm pretty sure I did.
Undoubtedly you did. We were kind of like local darlings for about 5 years. So I don't doubt at all that you played the M's.
Well, now it's full circle. Here we are. And we should all check out Cult Canyon, the very special show coming up on Monday, June 22nd at Cafe Mustache at 2313 North Milwaukee Avenue in Chicago. July 14th, Gallagher Way outside of Wrigley Field. And you've got another show coming up at the end of July, right?
Yeah, that'll be in my hood at the Montrose Saloon. And we're playing, that'll be a full band set, but kind of more rocking, you know, romping, stomping kind of thing over there at Montrose. So that'll be a fun one too.
And that's kind of the vibe of the Montrose Saloon, you know?
Yeah, it really is. Come in, have a good time, wear some earplugs, listen to some music.
Love it. I love it all. Well, Josh, thank you so much. Josh Shequin is a local musician. His bands Cult Canyon and Temp Wishes. Really great stuff that you're putting out here. Some great opportunities to catch you live. Josh, thank you so much for chatting with us today.
Great, Mike. Appreciate it. Thanks.
For many of us, fitting in is something we rarely think about. But for others, factors such as sexuality, religion, age, or race can make finding a sense of belonging much more difficult. A new film takes on those themes of identity and acceptance. It's called Ricardo. And joining us today is the film's writer, director, producer, and star, Roberto J. Roberto, welcome to Outside the Loop.
Hey, thanks, Mike. I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. And the website we should put out there, ricardoshortfilm.com. So you do like everything in this film. Yeah. You wear many hats. You're very busy here. But the film, like I was saying, really deals with identity, and it's largely based on your own life experiences. Can you tell us a little bit about how you sort of concepted this and where this comes from?
Absolutely. So first of all, just to give you a little bit of background on what the film is about, it does follow a multi-ethnic biracial actor who is at war with his image and on the brink of a life-changing opportunity is repeatedly told he doesn't exactly look the part, which then sets him on a path towards reclaiming his identity and his heritage. And for me, I mean, having grown up in a biracial household with a Puerto Rican father and Italian mother, I have been, and with a name like Roberto, it often confused the industry and not to mention sort of the outside world. So kind of tying that into the character of Ricardo, he tries to assimilate in a way that he thinks the world wants to see him as. And then with each step that he takes towards success, he has to sort of decide whether it's worth sacrificing his authenticity as a multi-ethnic person. So basically, to put it simply, the story is like identity crisis meets imposter syndrome. Mm. And I have to say that what sort of inspired me to create this film, it's sort of twofold. With family and the entertainment industry itself. So firstly, I'll say that First Fold, the film is a statement about the intricacies and nuances of what it means to be a multi-ethnic individual within the entertainment industry, mm-hmm. and then breaking through some of those stereotypes that the world on a larger scale likes to box us in. And, you know, I sort of developed a frustration that's sort of tied to the quiet but persistent pressures to define yourself in ways that are easier for people to understand, especially if you exist outside of these cultural binaries. So as frustrated folk tend to do, I decided to write a story about it.
Yeah, yeah.
One that explores the tensions of what it means to be seen but not fully understood and how that misunderstanding can slowly shape, distort, and even fracture one's sense of self. And then that second fold of my upbringing, you know, as I had mentioned previously, I did grow up in a biracial household where on one side, my mom stuck very strongly to her Italian beliefs and overall faith, while my dad took a lot of pride in what it is to be Puerto Rican. So with that said, English itself was still this universal language that was spoken in the household. And I have to believe that my parents both thought that English would get me further, which is why Spanish wasn't spoken very much with me and my sisters. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I sort of want to go further into explaining, you know, like being the older sort of sibling in this household. So I grew up in a sibling set with two younger sisters, me being the eldest. And I was taught to take care of my sisters and to look after their sort of well-being. And because of that, everything that is tasked to me, I do handle with care. And so I learned the value of family from both my parents. And I think that I transferred some of this energy over to this character of Ricardo, in that Ricardo cares deeply about his future as an actor. And he cares so deeply about the stories he wants to tell and how he wants to make, you know, his dad proud of being by being successful. And then not just his dad, but his mom too. And within the story, the mother is Ricardo's mother is not around. She has sadly passed away. And so despite her not physically being there, her spirit kind of guides him to make some very vulnerable choices in the film. And that is a testament to how much she meant to him and wants to still make her proud. I think it's very important to share with the world, you know, especially now that multicultural is a thing and that we as multi-ethnics often look ethnically ambiguous, like we don't belong, but that doesn't mean we don't have this kind of like lived experience, which is probably the most powerful type of experience anyone can have.
Right. And, you know, in the United States, I'm just thinking about this, how often we hear that, hey, we are a melting pot. But that kind of approach to thinking about society in the United States, or that view of this melting pot, can sometimes be a little disorienting, I think, for some, because people might not know, like, well, what does that mean? Am I supposed to be this? Am I supposed to be that? And you talked about that, right, with stereotypes and what society expects of certain people because they maybe present themselves in a certain way. Okay, we're all supposed to come together and be one thing, but that is, I think, obfuscating some of the challenges that you're talking about here. It sounds like that was the case with your story.
Absolutely. You know, and the thing about it is there's a certain amount of paradoxes that come along with this kind of melting pot sort of concept. And Ricardo deals with multiple paradoxes within the film. He deals with the authenticity paradox and the belonging paradox, the visibility, you know, the choice, the identity. And, you know, if identity is personal, why does everyone, you know, else believe they have a vote in in deciding, you know, like who you are? And I think that is a direct byproduct of being within this melting pot. And, you know, Ricardo, the film itself, I think is a celebration of what it is to be you and what it is to be multi-ethnic and multicultural, and then to have a specific identity that is tied to that nature. And I mean, these paradoxes themselves, you know, the authenticity paradox, you know, to be accepted as himself, he must perform a version of himself. You know, that's, I think that's somewhat of the issue nowadays too, is people are so pressured to be one thing because of what other people see them as, but why not celebrate, you know, that individuality instead?
And here we are in Pride Month in June, and I think that this is a time to really reflect on identity for a variety of factors. Kind of what you're talking about here, right? Just kind of reflecting on who we are, who we want to be, and how do we fit in, or sometimes how do we, you know, how are we excluded from the larger society? And it sounds like that's kind of the takeaway from this film, Ricardo, what you just said, really reflecting on who we are, and also how do we show up for other people, right? How do we look at someone and say, oh, this person must be fill in the blank, and you don't know the story, what's going on sort of behind the curtain.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, you know, thank you for saying that about, you know, what to take away from this film, because, you know, this is a story for anyone who has ever been told they don't look the part, you know, within the entertainment industry, or just like on the larger scale, you know, in the world, even though they live it, right? It's lived experience. And in an industry that is finally starting to sort of claim its definitions of ethnicity and race, you know, Ricardo speaks to ethnically ambiguous creatives who are starting to find their identities in both public and private spaces. And that is totally in line with, you know, the time of the season. And as you were saying, with Pride Month, and we just celebrated Puerto Rican, you know, Pride this past weekend here in Chicago, you know, and we continue to celebrate these prideful events throughout the month. And, you know, I hope that multicultural artists and anyone experiencing imposter syndrome or feelings of a lack of belonging, for that matter, you know, watching this film, will walk away from it with the courage of knowing that their lived experience is so much more valuable than they know, and that there is power in authenticity, and that identity is not something you ever have to prove. It's just something you live, you have to live for others to see you, and to take pride in who you are and where you come from. And don't let anyone tell you who to be. Success is not worth that internal conflict.
I think it's a great message. And the film is called Ricardo. The website, ricardoshortfilm.com. So if we want to check it out, do we go to the website? How does that work?
Absolutely. So the website itself will have information on upcoming screenings, upcoming events, and there's a trailer up on the website as well. And like, just, you can follow along on the website for other events. We'll have meet and greets as we get closer to the Excel Fest. And so that is happening in August. That's going to be kind of the launching slash premiere of the film. We did have a premiere screening, I should say a first screening of it on Wednesday at Soho House. And that was quite delightful. A nice turnout, including the cast and our lovely production team, which consists of up-and-coming talent within the Chicago film community.
Lots of Chicago connections to this film. We can go to the website, ricardoshortfilm.com. And Roberto J. is a local filmmaker, writer, director, producer, and he stars in the film Ricardo. It's got a really powerful message. And Roberto, thank you so much for talking to us today. Keep it up.
It was such a pleasure to be here today, and I do appreciate the opportunity to speak about the film and the message that it has to share with the world. Thanks, Mike.
That'll do it. Outside the Loop show number 1027 is done. Thank you so much for listening to the show today. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his wonderful help in the WGN radio studio as our engineer. Have a fantastic week. Happy Father's Day to all the dads out there. And I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.